I like specialists. I'm always skeptical of folks trying to sell everything because I just haven't seen many agencies deliver on that promise.
Hey, it's Joel Pilger, and this is episode 41 of the Rev Thinking Podcast, the conversation between creative entrepreneurs who know the best way to deal with the future is to create it. On today's episode, I'm speaking with Jim Reed. Jim is the creative director of design at True TV. We're talking about the topic of balancing data with intuition.
Welcome to Rev Thinking. RevThink leverages years of experience and practical wisdom to help owners of top creative studios, so you don't have to choose between following your passion and running your business. Now here is your host, Joel Pilger.
Hey, it's Joel. Today is Wednesday, April 25th. Welcome to the RevThinking podcast. Good to have you with us today. I'm excited about my conversation with Jim Reed at True TV. Before we get into the podcast, as you know, I like to share a few updates, bits and bytes from what's going on in the RevThink world. Busy, busy, and this coming up month is no exception. Of course, we're preparing for ProMax BDA. In June, our clients are busy already doing their homework and prepping and promoting, doing outreach, because that event in New York City in June is the mother load if you work in the entertainment space. We look forward to seeing you there. We will be there with bells on. Lots of cool announcements yet to come about what we will be doing at ProMax, so stay tuned. One event I can share you the details about is Show Launcher. This is something we're doing in partnership with NatP. It's a quarterly workshop series, and this first series we're doing is really around the topic of don't sell TV, develop TV that sells. So this is going to be a quarterly masterclass that's led by Patrick Jaeger and Tim Thompson, teaching you how to successfully sell your ideas to audiences that are ready to buy it. So if you're in content development, this is your jam. Now, the first session, number one, is called Understanding the Marketplace. That's happening May 24th in Los Angeles at NatP. Let's see. We have some upcoming episodes. I thought I'd give you a little sneak peek of what's coming up on the Rev Thinking podcast. I think we have the next episode teed up is Rev Think's very own Jason Fletcher. I interview him around the ingredient of finance, and that episode is called The Story Your Finances Are Telling You. That's one you got to listen to because as a creative entrepreneur, this is where most of you are really weak in the area of finances. Also in the queue, I'm looking forward to doing upcoming episodes with David C. Baker. He used to run Recourses. He just changed the name. He's still an awesome and amazing consultant in the space of marketing and advertising firms and creative entrepreneurship. Also, Blair Enns from Win Without Pitching. Blair's agreed to come on the podcast, and I can't wait because Blair is one of my favorite people in the world. I've learned so much from Blair about pricing, about pitching, and about business development. So make sure you listen for that one. And also, Carlos El Asmar. Carlos is at F5 and Motionographer. Now, F5 is a conference that is slated to come back soon, and you're going to want to go to this conference in New York. And of course, you know Motionographer, so stay tuned and listen up for the episode coming up with Carlos. Okay, for all this information, go to revthink.com. Or if you're an owner in a creative firm, we invite you to join our 7 Ingredients group on Facebook. You can stay in touch with all of the happenings there. Okay, to today's episode with Jim Reed. So Jim comes from a background of TV, marketing and promotions. Now, both on the TV network side as a client, as well as on the agency side. So on the TV side, he worked at places like CMT, AMC, and he's now at True TV. But he also worked at agencies like Definition 6 and Eyeball and Trailer Park. So he has a lot of experience on both sides. So today's episode is really an insightful peek behind the curtain to understand what it's like in Jim's world. What's the crazy evolving world like for a TV network creative director? And of course, I ask him things like, well, what types of outside agencies does Turner work with? And what defines a great collaborator? Is it a studio that specializes? Or is it that 360 offering that we hear about so much? And of course, what everyone is talking about these days, especially in the world of ProMax, what's the role of data? Is data superior to intuition? Or do the two somehow interact to create better results in our modern world of second and third screens and OTT and apps and all that stuff. Okay, well, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Jim Reed at True TV.
So, Jim, what's your title?
That's a really good question. I think officially, I'm going to look at my card. It says Creative Director Design.
Creative Director Design. And you work at a network?
Yeah, we are a really small little thing, part of the Turner network, True TV. Yeah.
The Turner.
We're a little comedy.
The
network.
Turner solar system.
Thing. Yep.
And how long have you been hanging out here at True TV?
About a year and a half.
Okay. Now, of course, what I love about you and your background is we have some similar stuff in our background in that you spent a lot of years on the agency side.
Yes.
And were you, were you a creative on the agency side? Were you?
Yeah, probably more years in total on the agency side. I came up, you know, I went to design school. I studied type and design and photography and
where was school?
Art Center.
Okay.
Out in Pasadena. Yeah. And then when I graduated, I ran out of money in school. I couldn't pay for school, so I had to start working right away. And through a series of pretty unfortunate events, a failed internship at Digital Domain that fell through literally the day before I was supposed to start, and me not being enrolled in school, I somehow got super lucky and landed a gig doing some work for Disney. That really helped set me up, you know, definitely piqued my interest in design for entertainment. You know, I always loved films and TV. Most of the focus of my work has been in design in support of entertainment, whether it be film, TV, brands. But even the brand work that I've done has been more, I would say, more emotionally driven through experiences and non-conventional things.
And what was the transition that brought you to New York and caused you to leave L.A.?
My wife and I had been in LA for a long time. We had a daughter. Ava was about one, and we were both ready for a change. And I think both of us struggled with, we were starting to think about the school situation in LA, which seemed, a little tough, and the options that existed. We just weren't super fans of, I think it's tough to be a parent. I think it's tough to be a kid in LA, but the work in LA was amazing.
Right.
I mean, so many top agencies, so many top studios. I think as a young professional, it was incredible. So we're just honestly just ready for a change.
Right. Now I have to mention this little side note that there was an era when you and I, our paths overlapped because I was running Impossible, and I don't remember how we got connected, but I remember you were looking to make a change and I was looking to hire a creative director.
Yeah.
And there was this thing of like, whoa, Joel, your shop's in Colorado. Yeah. That could be really cool. I've always thought that was just a fun conversation back then. And, you know, planets didn't align, but here we are today and still getting to hang out.
All good. Yeah. It didn't, you know, for whatever reason, it didn't make sense at the time and that's fine. Everything works out.
You know? And you were gracious enough to go recently to Moldova.
Yeah,
with Tim and I and
Mika
and Rob.
One interesting experience, yeah.
Yeah, and I have to say that as a busy network executive, can I call you that, or is that like a kind of a negative term?
I'm not in that E-suite yet. That's kind of weird, man.
Okay.
I'm definitely not a suit.
How about a busy network creative?
I actually like to make things. Sometimes that sort of goes against.
Well, how about as a busy creative leader in this organization, you were gracious enough to take time out of your schedule, which I think was kind of last minute, right? Mm-hmm. Because we had somebody else slated that fell through, and Tim was like, Jim, you got to help me out. You got to go to Moldova. You're going to love it.
I've worked a lot with Tim over the years, and whenever Tim calls, I jump in and help because it's usually an adventure. And and he and I work really well together. I dig his style. We're great collaborators and friends and have been for a long time. So
when you look back on that, how long were we in Moldova? Like 4 or 5 days?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Like when you look back on it, do you sum it up and say it was bizarre, it was amazing, it was
all of the
above?
I
don't remember it because I was in a jet lag funk.
All of the above. Interestingly, I suffered almost zero jet lag going and coming back almost nothing. I straight back into action. And I think maybe going, just, you know, it's fun to be in a new place and seeing decaying Soviet infrastructure, you know, a decades
yes,
old.
The brutal
Soviet
architecture of Moldova.
Infrastructure is kind of incredible. But yeah, it was a really interesting experience. There are a lot of, you know, really talented folks over there who are just surviving on raw, like, willpower.
Yes.
And creative energy. And I think their future is pretty bright. Mm-hmm. You know, the talent's definitely there. And I'm interested to kind of follow along, and if I can help and help and guide and maybe look for some opportunities for collaboration. You know, there's certainly, you know, equally talented folks there,
right,
you know,
right,
to the agencies and folks we work with here.
So this is where I can say I love that you have all that agency background, because I always find it fascinating when someone makes a shift in their career from working with all that agency experience and then says, I'm going to go now work as, quote, the client, mm-hmm, or on the client side or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you bring a perspective and more that I know people that listen to us and the podcast find fascinating, because it's like, oh, here's somebody who's been in my shoes who is now on that client side. And the clients, I think, often get sort of that bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people on the agency side, well, why are the things that way? And that's so frustrating. And that's, those people are so dumb. And if I was there and I was running things, it would be so different. And I always think it's nice to hear what it's sort of really like to be in this world.
Yeah.
Because it's always easy to look at your clients and say, oh, they should just do this and they should just do that, and everything would be better.
Yeah.
So I'm grossly oversimplifying, but you've been now working in the TV network world for a couple of years. Did you say
my stint here at True TV? Yeah. And before True TV, I, you know, spent a little time at Epix, spent a little time at AMC, did some agency work in between. So, yeah.
So how,
something like that.
When you just start to look, mm-hmm, back now and have some perspective, what's like maybe the broad takeaway of, wow, when I shifted from being the guy that was doing a lot of work on the agency side, mm-hmm, to stepping into this world?
Well, I guess I'll talk more specifically about True TV.
Okay.
Because every network works differently. I mean, each one,
sure,
is its own unique culture and works differently. And some are very hierarchical and rigid, and some, mm-hmm, are very flat. We're very flat. So I communicate pretty regularly with our president. That was something that I never done before.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty regularly. Mm. I have time with him, so I get pretty deep insight into where we're going. I would say I don't know if anyone can predict beyond 3 years at this point.
Yeah.
Because the rate of change is just so fast. But I would say I have deeper insight into what our goals as a network are, you know, maybe some of what our ratings goals are,
mm-hmm,
you know, where we stack up in the cable network world. We definitely have goals of displacing a few folks and continuing to climb the ladder.
Uh-huh.
We've done that. I think just recently we surpassed Bravo as the youngest, richest network that's entertainment. So not, not
right,
counting news or sports.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are crushing it. But that's kind of amazing. You know, when I think about it, we're tiny, and we are growing in audience size. Our shows continue to get better and better as we've firmly planted our feet in creator driven comedy. That takes a lot of time and effort. And, you know, the programming team, the development team has been just working overtime to really change what this network is. So it's kind of fun for me, really. I'm just here to support that, you know, to get as many people to tune into that programming as possible. We are essentially, you know, we're delivering people from ad pod to ad pod. That's where we monetize. That's,
yeah,
where we,
sure,
make the money. So we have to have good, compelling content. There's so much out there. It, you know, we're going after this segment. We're, you know, nothing against Comedy Central. They're incredible. They're a slightly different comedy brand. They're a much more mature comedy brand. They've been around a lot longer. They have the word comedy in their name. but we're gunning for them. and making some headway. So that's all good news. I have a lot of insight into just bigger, broader goals outside of just the day-to-day of, you know, what is this little campaign that I'm tasked to come up with, or what is this graphics package or show package or promo package or show title? I mean, those are all super, super fun, you know, hands-on crafted little things. I think that, you know, we always want those things in service of moving the dial and moving the meter. Mm-hmm. So, I would say, you know, I have just more insight into, kind of strategy and bigger picture thinking.
So when I think of you years ago, when you were working on the agency side, I'm thinking like ad pod was probably not a term that mm-hmm. was talked about commonly when you're being tasked for, let's launch a show, let's do the big 30 second promo, you know, let's develop a campaign and that sort of thing. Like when you look back, you know, could you have looked ahead and said, oh, someday after I've spent several years working inside of a network, it makes sense that there's going to be a lot of strategy, a lot more moving parts, a lot more implications. You know, I'm building a whole brand and I have all these sub brands called shows. And again, I don't know what your nomenclature is, but could you have even, I don't know if you, could you even speak that language back then? Could you imagine all the stuff you were going to learn?
It's a lot more complicated. That's for sure. And I think, you know, in identifying, you know, if you're going to simplify or strip it down to solve a problem, right, and figure out like, who are the stakeholders, who has to buy into this, who signs off on this, you know, where are we going with this, what are the, you know, how do we measure success? It's a much more complicated. I wouldn't say it's better or worse. Mm-hmm. The kind of work that I'm doing, it's just much more complicated. It's much more textured. It's much more layered. There are a lot more implications. There are a lot more players. When you weave in talent, that kind of takes things to a whole new level. You know, we want Amy Sedaris to buy in on what we do with her. Mm. She's really important to us and to me as a partner. If I'm, you know, designing a key art campaign with her, because our flavor of shows is creator driven. You know, she is a creator of the show. She's in the show. She wants to know what's going on with marketing. She has super strong opinions, and those are great because it's, you know, we are really relying on the brand of Amy, to help the show. So, you know, that adds, you know, a layer of complexity when we are also working with a media planning agency, you know, an agency that helps us develop communication plans and identify, you know, who our viewers are, what segment we're going after, what a launch plan might look like. So, you know, coordinating a lot of moving parts to come up with, you know, hopefully good solutions that, you know, check all the boxes. It's hard. There are a lot of moving parts. Yeah.
So when you refer to an agency, let's imagine maybe that could be a production company. That could be a motion design studio. That's
mm-hmm.
it.
Yep.
How helpful is it for them to have, I'll call it empathy for that complexity and what you're up against? Like if they have an understanding of that, does it make them a more valuable collaborator? Or
maybe I should ask for that more. I try and, you know, and some assignments work out great and some assignments don't. But I try and tee them up for success as much as possible and make it as easy as possible for them. I maybe a bit more old school in my thinking of, or maybe not old school, but I tend to prefer having like the least amount of information that I need to succeed, because I find extraneous detail, I don't find it helpful to crafted assignments. So my brain, I can only handle so much data processing, and then it eventually just becomes a distraction. So I kind of prefer to be put in a bubble when I'm in creative mode and then just feel safe in that bubble. Mm-hmm. So I maybe try and do that with the teams I work with and be very focused on what we're trying to achieve and how we might get there.
Mm-hmm.
and maybe identifying upfront, we're doing this now. You know, we sometimes work with unconventional partners, agencies. Hmm. So
what might that look like?
So let's say, for example, you know, key art is one of the things we develop. You know, key art just means, you know, an image that maybe, you know, the benchmark image for a campaign.
Right, and then sort of the tentpole visual.
Yeah, exactly. And then everything that kind of flows from whatever that concept is for that specific season or campaign. Right now we're working with a vendor who's never done that before.
Okay, interesting. So you're looking for some fresh perspectives and that kind of thing.
Right. So there's a lot of learning both ways. And, you know, hopefully we don't crush their spirit. I mean, that happens sometimes. That does happen sometimes. It's very difficult. I mean, the agencies who rise to the top of being able to do that work are very, very good at what they do.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot. There are so many, you know, there's the client management portion. There's the just pure creative. There's the production portion. There's
that
finishing.
The talent layer you talked about.
Talent. And, you know, there are a lot of things. You know, we like it if most of those boxes are checked, but it's pretty rare. We have a couple of partners who check all the boxes, and that's why we go back to them over and over again.
Right. But at the same time, you also do occasionally work with somebody that's just bringing in something mm-hmm. new. So it's not about, oh, we mm-hmm. have this deep expertise mm-hmm. and all this history of, you know, of trustworthiness. It's more mm-hmm. like, no, there's that certain spark that you see and you say, I think I can use that and adapt it or translate it
right.
into this application.
Yep. Or try.
Yeah. Or at least
try. It doesn't always work out.
Yeah.
And that's okay too. You know, we have had a couple of failures and totally fine. You know, I encourage the team to go for it and it's not always going to work out the way we want it to. I'm trying to figure out a way to correlate the work that we do to ratings. It's a very difficult path to map. You know, when you think about creative, there's media, there's strategy and messaging and scheduling and so many things that are in the mix. Yeah. So when we're trying to evaluate, like, well, was it good creative? Did it work? We just don't really know.
And that's actually a great point because I think, as creators, as makers, a lot of times we have this bias that basically just simply says, if it worked, right, if it drove great ratings, it created great results, we think it's the creative, see?
Mm-hmm.
And there actually are a lot of other mm-hmm. moving parts there.
Yeah, many, many
And
factors.
Sometimes, like you were saying, maybe it's the way the media buy was done and the timing of it and the whatever that actually was the genius
and
behind it.
And that's becoming more and more important with, like, all the crazy real-time stuff we can do and audience segmentation we can do and targeting we can do. It's nuts. Like, we can talk to specifically the person that we want to talk to.
Wow.
So kind of knowing and defining that audience, really important. Well, to back up a second, if you work at Netflix, you get real-time feedback. You know, they're on a whole different planet. It's pretty fascinating, and I think a lot of us admire sort of what they're doing and how they're able to measure a direct impact of creative on engagement. Yeah.
I think I saw something posted. It was a LinkedIn article mm-hmm. that literally showed like 12 different compositions.
You guys should totally talk to Andy Baker.
Yeah, I know. He's on my list.
Yeah.
So Andy, if you're listening, you got to come back on the podcast. But yeah, I saw this layout of like 12 different end pages
mm-hmm.
and they weren't really all that different. It was like mm-hmm. the logos on the left,
right.
the show titles on the right, whatever. Right. And the article talked about Netflix being able to measure which one of these you like so that when they send you to another end page design, they're going to use that again to try and get a higher engagement. But it's like the most subtle stuff that you would think, why would that possibly matter? But it's like if you can measure it, well, then you can do something with it.
Yeah, we just have to guess. You know, we guess based on what we learned in art school. You know, hierarchy, we manipulate hierarchy. What are we going to look at first, second, third? And we manipulate size, scale, color, messaging. You know, if you want to get really fancy, there's eye tracking testing that can be done.
Meaning there's like a vendor that you could bring in to do that
sort
there's,
of... There's a Media Lab right downstairs here in the Time Warner Center. That's a Nielsen Media Lab that has some capabilities to do those kinds of things. It gets expensive. And there are other testing platforms. We have a research team here. That's one thing that I've been able to tap into that's been new for me to learn, mm-hmm. And a resource for me. So we redesigned the on-air package, the on-air look, the on-air brand this year. We rolled it out. It began last year and then rolled it out. I think we were mostly rolled out by March. And one of the things that we did as part of that, just to speak to this, you know, the connection of creative and data and research, again, like maybe coming from a place of feeling like so much creative gets thrown away, you know, how do we get just more efficient and specific and effective? So we, in our previous on-air package, we had lots of what we call secondary graphics. So it's things like lower thirds, some people call them snipes, or mm-hmm. little animations that come out of the bug, or
elevators,
upper fifths, elevators. There are many, many different names of these things. Kind of depends on what network you work for, mm-hmm. What naming standard these things have. We had many different devices, and the feeling was, the intuition was, this is a cluttered experience. We were questioning, as our programming became more premium, is this reflective of the programming we have on air or that's coming out soon and where we want to go?
Right.
You know, we think about some other networks that play in that premium space, Showtime, HBO, FX. Right. There are a bunch of them that we, I think, as creatives and designers really admire.
That are just doing less heavy-handed when it comes to snipes and
yes,
these little
exactly.
interrupters and
exactly.
things. Yeah.
Exactly. So we had quite a few, I think, I don't know, maybe six different types of things that could be used. So we, as part of our redesign, we're thinking, well, how much can we strip it back? Like, can it be nothing? You mm-hmm. know, is that a possibility? Or can it be super, super minimal? Like, what? How much can we strip it back and still communicate the things we need to? Does it impact intent of view, likability? Do people actually use TuneIn? Is it memorable at all? Like, a lot of questions that I've, on the agency side, wondered. Like, why do we do this?
Let me ask this context. When you say we in this process, was mm-hmm. this you and the agency that you mm-hmm. hired to develop that
yes.
rebrand?
Yes.
So together you yep. were asking those questions.
Yeah.
And did you have, was data an important part in that conversation?
Yeah, that's how you sell it. That's how you, you know, right. that's, I wouldn't say everything. But it's helpful. It's an input, and you know, maybe you gotta ask the right questions.
And has that changed, right? Like yeah. 5 or 10 yeah. years ago, I don't know if you know if that data was really there. You mm-hmm. had to rely a lot more on intuition.
We do not have. I asked, has anyone? We asked Nielsen, has anyone tested secondary graphics in this way? And they told us no.
That's surprising.
They had nothing that they could share with us. We, you know, there are other testing outfits. They're kind of the benchmark. They're the big dogs. So we did it. We put some stuff into testing.
Uh-huh.
There were a number of things we put into testing. The major takeaway and what our interpretation was that it did ding the premium feel of the network. The preferred viewing environment was fewer secondary graphics. That really had to be weighed with, you know, of course people don't want it because it's in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, you know, they might not want it, but they have to, you know, we have to do some, you know, in
sure.
a world where
'cause it is navigational.
GRPs are shrinking, where we have less and less opportunity to promote our own shows. We occasionally sometimes, you know, do have to use these different devices.
Right.
So, but we radically reduce them. We have two different things we do in that lower third area, and they're very nice, they're very clean, they're very premium.
Uh-huh.
One that's a little bit bigger and a little bit more eventy, and one that's just nice and stays kind of tucked in the corner and is there if you want.
I am curious to know, did you find that on TuneIn's mm-hmm. specifically, I've always wondered, do people actually notice that it says 8 p.m. you know, PTET or whatever, like
yeah.
Did you learn anything that is that noise or is it actually no. useful information?
We asked the same question. We're kind of auditing right now a lot of stuff. We're auditing our messaging. Specifically, we're thinking about multi-platform and what we call TV everywhere. You know, there's lots of acronyms, OTT, VOD, yep. SVOD, MVPD, you know, just it's tons of acronyms. It'd make your head hurt. But basically, it's
you
want to
go through those and spell out all
no,
what those are.
No,
exactly.
I'll get some of them wrong. But to simplify,
multi-platform, I guess, is the
broad
nice term,
thing
right?
is that there's a True TV app. There's a and that app can live on many, many platforms. It's Fire TV, it's Roku, it's Apple TV. There is a mobile app. So once you understand that, so then it becomes like, okay, well, where do you want people to watch? You
know, and it becomes how do you want people to watch? Where I think, again, in recent history, the linear channel mm-hmm. was sort of the big daddy.
Yeah.
And then all of these multi-platform things were sort of ancillary.
Yeah.
They were the second screen, the third screen, the whatever. And it seems like that's actually
the
totally
shift is happening
shifting,
very,
blending.
Very quickly.
So now it's not so much like, oh, we're a linear TV channel who also happens to have. Mm-hmm. It's more like, no, we are what? A channel, a digital, you know, a multi-platform brand? Mm-hmm. I mean, what is it just kind
it's
of redefining
TV.
As you?
I mean, I think it's still TV.
But it doesn't necessarily play on this,
no,
this
it's,
big screen.
It's everywhere.
Here.
I think people know that. They can watch it anywhere. And the growth and the adoption, our download rates for all those apps on all those platforms has been growing tremendously. So we have to think about, we really want people to experience the linear television world right now. That's
because that's
mostly
premium,
how we monetize.
It's the most premium and it's the most money.
That's how we sell it. So I think the ad world has a little bit of catching up to do. The technology is like pretty ahead.
Yeah.
The good news is there's just more ways that you can experience the shows. It's super convenient, really easy. In lots of different environments.
So in a multi-platform world that we're just, again, rushing into, you know, headlong, what, when you think back just even a few years, what's the big takeaway if you are an agency that's creating for clients in this space? Is it just, well, it's no longer about the big 30-second promo, it's the deliverables list has gotten way longer because now we're it's key art and it's create all the stuff assets for Apple TV and it's
that's a really good question.
What's the big shift
so
happening
we,
there?
We hear a lot, we get pitched a lot from agencies. We're a multi-platform agency. We're soup to nuts. We do everything. We're multi-platform.
Yeah. Does that appeal to you?
When we drill down, what we typically find is that not so much. You know, even some of the larger players, in rare instances, may be awarded, but clients, generally speaking, are not awarding entire multi-platform campaigns to one place. That may be because of the way that some of the networks are siloed, or it may just be that, you know, most agencies come from a certain area of expertise and then grow and expand into other areas, but maybe not as successfully. And there are a lot of agencies I can think of that do multiple things, but I really only like working with them in one area because maybe the other group just isn't as good.
Maybe I can be tougher.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to be politically correct.
Right.
But personally, whenever I see an agency that has some sort of a positioning that says turnkey, full service, 360, I immediately think BS.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you don't have to say that. I'll say
it's BS.
Okay.
Yeah. It's all sales. And I would actually prefer, I like specialists. I'm always skeptical of folks trying to sell everything.
Because you know what to
I
do
just
with
haven't
a specialist.
Seen many,
right?
I just haven't seen many agencies deliver on that promise, you know, and it may be because, oh, well, there was one company that was an AV company and one company that was a print company and then they merged. But that doesn't mean they know how to work together or how to sequence a whole campaign. Like, OK, well, if that's the case, I've asked this in meetings with agencies and specifically I said, OK, that's cool. You guys are multi-platform. Who starts the process? Like who's the creative director? Like, is it one idea? Where does that idea start? Is it, Did you have somebody who came up through the print world and now does everything? Did this person come from the agency? The traditional agency model, I think, is maybe a bit more developed than the entertainment agency model. So maybe on that side of things, you may find some creative directors that really do understand concepts for everything.
Yeah.
But I think not. I think it's a bit more fragmented. And I think that as entertainment brands and entertainment agencies are starting to do this more and more. And heck, I came from one. I worked at Trailer Park, and they're a monster now.
Right.
And amazing. I work with Jeremy and Chelsea at Art Machine, which is part of the Trailer Park family. They're jumping in on something like today for me as an emergency help out project. And I love those guys. They're incredible. Yeah. I feel like folks typically have their focus. I would prefer to just kind of know that going in and then work with companies based on the one thing that they're really good at.
So you must spend a lot of energy. When I think of that fragmentation you talked about, there's mostly a lot of energy when you're like, okay, I've got this, effort, launch, whatever thing that you're having to do. And you're having to make sure that it's, of course, in sync with the whole mission of True TV. Mm-hmm. But then you're having to make sure that even that internal, I don't know if you call it a sub-brand or franchise or something, mm-hmm. has an internal cohesiveness and consistency across multiple agencies where, okay, these guys are doing print, these guys are doing out of home, these guys are doing the on-air, whatever. But you're okay with working with multiple experts.
Yeah.
Because you get better results than simply, if I had a, quote, one-stop shop, because that just doesn't quite really
deliver. It doesn't fit into our workflow, I would say, yet. We haven't found a partner that we all have thought that, every area of support has been like top notch enough to have the comfort level to do that. Mm-hmm. We have worked to be very modular, super modular. We have a great in-house team. We have great in-house designer animators in the digital space and the print space. They're doing more and more work. Some of the work they're doing is just as good as, if not better than, some of the agency partners we work with. We do sometimes have thoughts and ideas. We have an unfair advantage, I will say that, against the agencies. Cause if we have a big show and it's there, ideas coming in from multiple agencies, and then we see something, we can make something. We can make it. We have a totally unfair advantage. We can say, that's not exactly right, but it makes me think of this, 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 and this. And then I can say, hey, Hermes, let's make some stuff. And we kind of white label everything so that, we don't necessarily like to have what agency is working on something sway what the concept is and when it's being evaluated. And we like to put them all up on the wall. We put them all up on the wall and, whatever is working for people, that's what makes it through. So
that's interesting. So it's not so much like, here's the ideas from agency A B, and then here's our ideas.
No.
You just put everything up there and just kind of let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. So it's just an honesty and an integrity of like what's really resonating. Regardless of the source,
there's still a lot of manipulation that can be done. I mean, think about that. You're taping things up on a wall. Like if you want to weight something, you stack in the deck.
Oh, you put it in the center.
If you put it in the middle or put it in the eye line, it's like
the grocery store where this stuff's at eye level that they want you
to
buy.
It's worth way more.
Yeah, exactly.
So, we can stack the deck, and we share what things we think will work better or intuitively feel more right for something.
Right,
but. Going back to being modular and being flexible, it's just really important to us because we are working on so many things at once, and they're all across the spectrum of different kinds of challenges with different kinds of creator partners with different timelines and different expectations in terms of ratings and maybe different media dollar support behind with, it's incredibly complex. So being agile is super helpful. So today I called Jeremy and asked him if he could help on something really fast, and they can. So we're going to have them save our asses.
Thank you, Jeremy.
I really appreciate that. And I also appreciate, you know, we get agencies sometimes tell us no. Nope, can't do it. I love that. I want to hear no. If an agency cannot deliver and is not going to give the A team,
right,
then it's fine. That's fine. That's an investment in a relationship that I will really appreciate. And the next time I'll ask you again. And I mean, if it's always no, that might be a problem, you know.
Yeah, clearly.
Why don't you like me?
But you want yes or you want no, but the worst is the maybe.
Yeah.
Or the yes that feels like you're sort of being sold or pitched, mm-hmm, or something, mm-hmm, and you know that it lacks confidence, and then, mm-hmm, later you realize, oh crap, I got the B team, the C team, mm-hmm, the D team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this time of year, you know, we all get reflective and say, okay, winding up a year, and now we're going to take what we learned and apply it to next year.
Oh man, I've already been deep in the trenches for the last, like, I feel like 8 weeks planning for 2018. We have a shift in the way that we're going to approach our marketing, which is going to impact how we approach creative on a few things. So we're just setting up for success there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So for the partners that you work with, mm-hmm, how, you know, what do you find in those partners that are really well positioned and, mm-hmm, really, really that can potentially be massively helpful,
yeah,
in the new year? Are there certain characteristics or attributes that you find that, again, changing,
right,
and how much?
Right. Well, I mean, the one thing, yes, things are changing. They're changing rapidly. I think the only constant is change. So, you know, and I've heard a couple of folks here ask this, and I've maybe heard a little bit of feedback from the agency side. You know, maybe some remembrance of a better time, or when are we going to settle into a groove, or, you know, when is it going to get a little more relaxed, or when is it going to calm down? And the answer is never. No, it's just going to get worse.
Right. You know, you just say, don't hold your breath.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the only thing to do is really try and feel energized by the change and embrace it and take it as a challenge, because we have in the TV world, you know, there are a couple players out there that are just crushing it and are kind of flipping us upside down. So, yeah. You know, viewership in general on linear television is dwindling.
Shifting.
Dwindling.
To say the least. Yeah.
So I think some of us are excited about, okay, like what can we do to adapt to this really quickly changing environment? And I think those of us who are, you know, hopefully able to embrace that high rate of change, you know, I hope we'll survive. I still see some other networks doing things really old school. I worry about them.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's clearly, when something is eroding, mm-hmm, and disintegrating, such as linear, the question isn't, oh gosh, what do we do? The pie is shrinking. It's more like the cheese is moving. Mm-hmm. Where is the cheese going?
Yeah.
And can we keep up with it?
Yeah. It's going to social and digital,
yeah,
is where it's going.
Absolutely.
Much more targeted, much more timely, much more specific. And many, many, you know, people are on mobile, they're on the web, like all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And in that environment, we can find you more effectively. It's just a better use of our dollars. You know, if you are a fan of Amy Sedaris, you can easily find her and find her show and follow along and be part of that community. That's like a way more engaging way to be marketed to, I think, than maybe watching a multi-million dollar shiny brand campaign on linear air.
Yeah.
So I think, you know,
so those good old days are now officially over.
Yeah. I think what it does, though, is it ushers in the kinds of things I'm excited about, which are new school combinations of technologies, social, experiential, unusual things.
Right.
You know, that's where weird and cool and fun things are happening. Huge launch campaigns with special shoots and, yeah,
diminishing, shall we say?
It's becoming harder and harder to justify them as being a good return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that we are just able to reach people in other ways, more effectively.
So that's what your eye is on in the new year is, well, it's all going to keep changing. Mm-hmm. So here we go. Let's embrace it.
Lots more digital, lots more social. Social, huge, huge. Our social team is just incredible. I mean, they're hilarious. They are so funny and so smart.
And how much has that really department grown? I'm just curious, right? Probably nothing like what it is a couple years ago.
You know, yeah, they've continued to grow, and not enough too. I think the volume of what they output is staggering. We've added a few folks to try and keep up with that growth. The growth of our social platforms is staggering. I mean, year over year, you know, hundreds of percentage, you know, growth. Wow. And it's just going to be bigger and better, more bigger, better. So as a designer, you know, it's kind of fun for me. We get to help and support, I guess, from, you know, when I think about design and creative, like it's a little bit platform agnostic. Like I don't necessarily care. I mean, each platform sort of has its maybe quirks and there are things related to craft and format certainly that are important. But I don't really care as long as I'm, you know, representing the show well, representing the brand well, and, you know, hopefully intriguing people enough with that creative to get them to check out the show. So it doesn't really matter to me.
Well, I think that's a good bookend, really, to kind of bring it back to creative. So I want to say thanks for sitting down and chatting. I appreciate you being a generous soul and sharing with
anytime
me and the industry, you know, all that you've learned and sharing that with us. So appreciate it, Jim. Thanks.
Thanks, Joel.
RevThinking is produced by RevThink. Feel free to connect with us at RevThink.com. We'd love to help. And hey, if you like the Rev Thinking podcast, please do us a favor by subscribing on iTunes and giving us your feedback.
Thanks for listening to Rev Thinking.
I want to tell you about a place to connect that you might not know about. It's our online community called Rev Community. It's a great place to get to know other creative business owners like yourself, to share some thought leadership and read other encouragement, to be challenged in this new marketplace, new technology, ideas, economic trends, and it's a place to research. Check out many of the resources we have online, our videos, and of course, this podcast. Join us today at revthink.com/community. If you're a creative studio owner, feel free to join us today at revthink.com/community. I look forward to seeing you there.